Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Now, for pretty obvious reasons, not a huge sport in this part of the world, but elsewhere, racing with huskies is hugely popular, and the people who do it are called mushers. One such person is Marla Brodsky, who's based in Massachusetts. Good afternoon, Marla.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Could you tell us about your dogs? How many of them do you have?
So I have 22 sled dogs, 20 Alaskan huskies, and two that are a crossbreed between a Greyster, a sprint dog, and an Alaskan Husky mid-distance dog.
How many dogs typically would you use with the sled?
So this weekend I'm doing my first mid-distance race of the season, 100 mile. You're allowed to take up to 12 dogs, maximum of 12, minimum of 8. Typically I've been running 10 dogs. At the Can-Am 250, you run 12. And an Iditarod, you run 16.
Right, so is it kind of like you have a panel of dogs, and then when it comes to each race, you go, who'll be best for this race?
That's correct. You want to have more dogs than you need for the race. So the most that I'll need is 12. Right now, I basically have two teams. I have what I call my A team, and that would be my elite team. And then I have a B team that would be puppies, younger dogs, and older senior dogs that would be my handler's team. I also do tours. I'm a business as well as a racing kennel. So having 20 dogs allows me to take care of clients, and typically I'll run two 10-dog teams.
And so, say among your elite team, is there a hierarchy among the dogs themselves that determines where they are in their physical positions to each other?
Clearly, there has to be only one alpha. That would be me, the driver.
Yes.
But in each litter, I feel you have your natural male and female alpha. And I have five litters that I bred, and they're all related. So if I had two alphas in each litter, I'd have 10 alphas and I'd have chaos. So your alphas turn out to be some of your best leaders because they're always thinking, they're watching you, they want to excel, they want to achieve. So you channel that energy into being really good leaders, but they have to listen to me.
Are the leaders, are they at the front of the pack, or where do you position them?
So I personally like to stack the front of my team with leaders, and I try to have as many leaders as possible. So I could be running with the whole front four to eight dogs of my team are leaders, and then in the back I have my wheel dogs, and they're almost just as important as the leaders because they are doing the grit work pulling the sled. So I have my wheel dogs in the back and then my team dogs. And then you have your swing dogs, which are the ones behind the leaders. And they can actually turn the team as well if your leaders are not sure what to do. One of the best dogs in my yard, who's 500% all the time, in mid-distance, he's always in swing because he'll drive us too fast for the longer races. But I can rely on him to do anything when I need him to.
And when you say you're relying on them to do things, are they to a large extent making decisions about the direction of the sled to avoid obstacles and the like?
A good wheel dog is going to pull you around the tree rather than into the tree.
Yes, you'd hope so.
I prefer my leaders to make nice wide S turns rather than tight Z turns. I have a little leader who has some border collie way back when from a champion musher. And when my string got longer, I started to move her out of lead because she liked to take really tight turns. So it's also how they listen to the driver. If I know I have a 90-degree turn coming up, I might tell my team to go to the left, and then at the last minute, I tell them to go to the right to make sure we clear.
Right. And so how many different kind of commands can you give them that they understand? Is it quite complex?
Well, we have our G, which is right, our haw, which is left. We have our line out, which is what you tell them to do to make the line taut and get ready. Hike is the traditional word to go. I'll use easy if I want them to just lighten up, to not pull quite as hard. Whoa is to stop. On by is to keep going past a distraction, leave it alone. When I come to an intersection, if I want them to keep going, I will tell them on by. My team gets very excited at intersections, and they tend to speed up. You also have a term called come around if you actually want them to make a U-turn. I try to use wait when we're stopped, that they know to not lunge and bang or pull to go, that they have to wait for me to tell them, let's go. It's really up to the musher how many terms you want to come up with, but there is a standard pool of terms. And at the finish, I always like to save a take it on home, especially when we're racing. They know we're almost done, and then they can give it all they got, and they can use up that reserve.
The races vary in length, but some of them can be 250 miles. Typically, how long does that take?
So the Can-Am 250, it starts on Saturday morning, and I think by Monday morning, the top finishers are coming in, and then the back of the pack, your Red Lantern finishers, could come in as late as Tuesday. I think they have to come in by Tuesday afternoon at 2 in order to qualify, and the race starts Saturday at 8. So Saturday morning at 8 until Tuesday at 2, that's how much time you have to do it. But people start coming in basically 48 hours from later.
That's
your mid-distance race, and those are qualifiers for the Iditarod or the Yukon Quest, which are your 1,000-mile distance races.
Are they nonstop?
No. There's checkpoints in all these races, and there's mandatory rest times at designated checkpoints. The race I'm doing this weekend, it's 50 miles. You have a mandatory 4-hour rest and no more than 5 hours. So you have to stay 4, but you have to leave by 5. And that's just the one checkpoint, 50 out, 50 back. The longer the race, the more checkpoints. I did the Defitega race in Canada last season. It was approximately a 70-mile leg and also only one checkpoint. I think there you could stay maybe up to 6 hours.
So presumably there's a lot of recovery time after a big race.
Right, because the first thing you always want to do is take care of your dogs. You want to get their booties off so their feet don't swell. You want to get them their food, their snacks, and then their hot meal. You want to get them their straw. Well, a professional sled dog, when they see that straw, they know it's time to go to sleep. So the challenge is to get them fed before they go to sleep and to clean up and have your sled bag ready. And the last thing you do is the musher gets to go into a tent, if there is one, and try to have some food and get some sleep. So the dogs will get more sleep than the musher, and the musher has to stay awake on the sled. The musher gets to sleep after the race.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously it's hard on them, but it must be hard on you as well if you're standing in, you know, the same prone position and trying to be very alert in sub-zero
that's right.
temperatures.
So that's why we have our, you know, chosen snacks in our pocket, and mushers, you know, if you pedal, if you're getting cold, you pump or pedal to keep warm, to keep moving. But that is the challenge. And if your dogs know you're falling asleep, they might. Are we going to stop and take a rest too? So it's a team. You're working as a team, and it's quite different than sprint racing. In the fall, I don't know if you have it over there in Ireland. I'm sure you do in the UK. The sprint racing, which is dry land, and that is something that I do. So I have a very versatile team. I do rig racing, and I'll race 4, 6, and 8 dogs with a three-wheeler, which is like a large tricycle that weighs maybe, you know, what, 30 pounds. And this year, for 2017, I'm actually the North American gold medalist in rig racing. We were invited to Poland for the World Championships, but we couldn't afford to go. And that's wicked fun. You know, you're only doing 2 to 4 miles, and you can bike, you can jog, you can scooter, or you can rig race. And then in the But once we start training, we're training for the longer races on the snow.
Do the dogs all get on with each other, or has that ever been a problem?
Dogs that aren't fixed sometimes have issues with other dogs that aren't fixed because they might be competing for the breeding rights. So I have some females that I have to be careful. I might leave a space in between. And you don't want the code is there is no fighting and there's zero tolerance, and dogs have to know that. It doesn't mean it doesn't happen. So I do some fixing of my dogs maybe more than other mushers. If I'm not breeding them and they're getting a little too uppity, I have a five-year-old that I just fixed because she's the littlest dog with the biggest attitude in my dog yard. So those are things that you do have to stay on top of. But my dogs are all related, and they get along each with their own litters because they get to free play in the pens. We do summer camps with kids in the summer, and they get to go swimming and hiking. We use gentle leaders to walk them, and they're used to meeting people and getting pets. And in my dog yard, they all can play with their neighbors. Mostly they get along. And when they're working, they're pretty much focused on working.
In previous lives, you were a blues singer, you were a taekwondo instructor, you were a drama teacher. Do you still do any of those things still?
Oh, you got the whole nine yards, didn't you? You know, I like to say that when I'm done mushing, I'll get back to singing the blues and I'll have a lot more sounds to make. Because... you know, right now my singing is I howl with my team. I sing with the dogs. I do what's called primal singing. It's pretty darn fulfilling when you let out a high note and you have a pack of what I like to call semi-tame wolves. When I have a pack of dogs respond to me and we sing together.
Yeah, what does that sound like, Marla?
Well, I was thinking because they respond when you they don't see you because they communicate. So they usually do it when you do it through the window. I'm going to put you on speakerphone right here. Let's climb to a window.
Okay.
Let's see if we can get them. They're all in their houses.
Mm-hmm.
They did their morning howl. When they're happy, they do their morning howl and their evening howl after they eat. And my youngest dog, they're always the first out.
Oh, that's brilliant. Okay, so you have to be careful not to do that too often, I imagine.
Can you hear it?
Yeah, we got that. We definitely got that. Marla, that's absolutely brilliant.
Can you hear that?
That's absolutely extraordinary. Marla Brodsky, or Marla BB, is a professional musher and much else besides, of course. Marla, thank you very much for talking to us.
Sean, thank you for reaching out to me. Appreciate it.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.